please rise for the invocation of the Pledge of Allegiance? Our most gracious Heavenly Father, thank you for bringing us here today. Please be with those in the audience. Please be with our residents. Please be with our military, our first responders. In your name we pray, amen.
Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Please be seated. The City of Kirby is dedicated to delivering excellent municipal services to our entire community in a fiscally responsible manner. Will our City Secretary please call roll?
Councilmember Pierce?
Here.
Councilmember Grant? Councilmember Wilson?
Here.
Councilmember Aldrich? Councilmember Apodaca?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Lehman?
Here.
Mayor Pierce?
Here. Councilmember Aldridge did indicate that she would not be here. And
Mr. Grant informed us he would not be here as well.
Item 5, citizens' participation. We have one person signed up. Sam, regarding cleanup.
Sam Richardson, 4802, Gift Sprawl. Last weekend, we did cleanup on Gibbs Sprawl Road and Old Seguin by the Old Market. We had 15 volunteers. Most of them were from QT, Quick Trip. A lot of their corporate people came down. They drove about an hour and 15 minutes down here to conduct cleanup. It was great. They are great partners. We got them even on our board of Keep Kirby Beautiful. We also have a cleanup at Higgins Park on the 17th. Republic will be there, and they'll be sponsoring that cleanup, hopefully. And we had over 1,000 pounds of dirt. And we had pictures. I'll make sure the city manager gets them and everything. And if you will look at that corner over there, maybe tomorrow, you can see how it looks great. You know, on both sides, the last block. You can see all the dirt and the grass that was growing there is gone. Hopefully we'll get it on city website sometime Friday or maybe Monday. Appreciate that. Thank you.
And you said the 17th?
17th, the third Saturday of each month.
All right, item 6, consideration of minutes. 6A. I will entertain a motion.
Mayor, I move that we accept the minutes as written on January the 25th, 2018.
Second. We have a motion by Councilmember Wilson, seconded by Councilmember Apodaca, to accept the regular meeting minutes of January 25th, 2018. Is there any discussion? All in favor, please raise your right hand.
Abstain.
One abstention. Item 7B, discussion and possible action on ordinance number O-2018-829, calling a bond election to be held on May 5th, 2018 to authorize the issuance of general obligation bonds. This is the first reading.
I'm sorry, Mayor, we missed item 7A.
Yes, sorry. Item 7A, discussion and possible action in regard to a potential street maintenance and reconstruction bond election in 2018.
I'll invite Ms. Berger up from Hilltop Securities.
Honorable Mayor and Council members, it's a pleasure to be back before you again this evening. Before I begin, I would like to take an opportunity to introduce Noel Valdez, who is with the law firm of McCall, Perkhurst, and Horton, and he has served as the bond counsel for the City of Kirby in the past and is currently also serving as the role of bond counsel. Prior to the meeting, I put a new presentation in front of your places. If I may ask you to please turn to slide 2. This is, again, the update for the Bond Buyers Index that we look at each week. This number, which goes to January 25th. The last time I was here, we looked at the number from January 19th. Interest rates based on this index have gone up 7 basis points, but I will point out that this is an index that comes out every Thursday. I'm sure as you are all very much aware, there's been an awful lot of volatility in all of the markets over about the last week or so. And so I don't know that this totally captures all that's gone on, since we won't get the new number until early tomorrow. But even if you turn to the second page, if you look at where we are from a historical perspective, we are still in a low interest rate environment. If I may ask you now to please turn to page 5. This is a chart that we have discussed the last couple of times we are here. This was originally information that was provided by the city engineer that included the priority of streets. What you will notice on this particular sheet is that there have been some updates. I did receive from Ms. Vernon some guidance of considerations from the council as to the particular projects to include. So if you look at this now, the aggregate number is $6,282,000, and each of the projects that are included on this list are solely for complete reconstruction, and all of them have 20-year useful lives. Going on to the next page, just a summary again of what we've been looking at from our assumptions is that we are assuming no growth in the taxable assessed valuation, but we have utilized the Bexar County Appraisal District's most current tax rolls. We also, even though that was an increased number from the numbers that we had used previously, we are only including 50% of that differential, because we understand that that number increased because of the boundary redrawn with the city of San Antonio, and pursuant to the guidelines, those increased values, the city of Kirby will get 50% of them, the city of San Antonio will get 15% of them for 15 years. So we've been conservative and we took the entire difference and are only using 50% of that number. As you are aware, when you get your next taxable assessed valuation, you will have a lot more detailed information in there, but we believe that this is a conservative approach to coming up with that number. We have slightly changed the amortization from when I was here before, because now, based on your guidance to include only those projects that have total reconstruction and 20-year useful life, we've extended the amortization by 1 year, so we have 20-year useful life and 20-year debt. We have included current market interest rates as of Monday, and we've added 65 basis points. I have no ability to predict what interest rates are going to be tomorrow, much less what interest rates would be in potentially August if the election passes and the council decides to call it. But one of the things that we've done on our side is we have used 10 basis points a month for projecting for interest rates. And should you decide to move forward and the election pass, we're about 6.5 months out from when you would do an election. So we have used 65 basis points. I think that that's an appropriate cushion given the current market, although again, none of us can be able to say what interest rates are going to be at that time. We do have a projected issuance in August of 2018. One of the important things, and we'll show this on the next slide, is based on the information and the assumptions we have utilized, there is the projection for there to be no tax rate increase for this bond issue in your 2019 year, and really the years thereafter. One of the things that we're suggesting that you do is most communities end up putting their entire debt service payment into their INS tax rate. And right now, the city of Kirby is only doing a 4-penny increase, and then you have a significant transfer that goes from your general fund to your debt service fund. So what we have discussed with Ms. Vernon is that your tax rate will stay the same. Now, the composition of it is that your INS tax rate may go up, but your M&O tax rate will go down by a corresponding amount. So in 2019, you will not see a tax rate increase. And going forward in 2020, you should not see a tax rate increase at all in your debt service tax rate. The other thing that we did is we worked again in a very collaborative effort with Ms. Vernon and your staff, as well as the city's auditor, to Deborah Frazier with Armstrong Vaughn, to identify additional funds in your fund balance that are not needed to meet your fund balance policy, that we'll be able to use those monies over a couple of year period to help make sure we can levelize the tax rate. So if you turn to the next page, we show, you can see the certified value was $258 million, but that did not include the new property values. So we've upped that to the $273, which includes only 50% of the increased amount. We have all of your existing debt service requirements, and those are debt service, those are capital leases, everything's been included. In your budget, you have been transferring about $373,000, and you can see in the column in to the right of that, we show that you would use about $581,000 to levelize your tax rate. Based on the conversations that we've had with Ms. Frazier, she believes you would actually have potentially $750,000. We don't even think that we need that entire amount, so you have a little bit of a cushion there. And so these are the total funds. And with this, we can demonstrate that we would be able to keep your INS tax rate the same, or if we shift it, you would have that corresponding reduction to your M&O. On page 9, we again have included the timetable for the election, and one of the key points on here is that the Tuesday of March 6th is the last day for a governing body to give the notice of election to the applicable county. So I guess the key point on this is, should the council decide to proceed, this meeting tonight really, due to state law requirements, is the last day for the opportunity for the city council to consider calling an election, unless you were to have a special meeting. And so with that, I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have relative to the useful life or relative to our analysis to the fact that there would be no tax rate increase as a result of this. If you have specific questions about the ordinance, I may defer to Noel to help answer those questions.
I guess one of the questions I had, and I'm not even sure that you would be able to answer it, but I do have a question as far as, I mean, these are preliminary numbers done by Ford Engineering based on today's market value. So we have experienced where they've been extremely off on some numbers. So in the event that there's something that's just wrong, at what point do we get that information? Just for the fact that, I mean, that's a large sum, but.
And the way I understand it, and Noel can correct me if I'm wrong, is that what we would do in this this ordinance would issue an amount not to exceed, or not to exceed amount. And so if that passes, when it comes down to it, when we get actual cost estimates, we may have to revise some of the streets. We don't have to list streets in the ordinance right now, nor will they be listed on the ballot. So it would really be just authorizing street maintenance. So our intent is to utilize all of these streets listed here, but again, we would have to get actual cost estimates.
One thing, Mayor, which may be helpful to support what Ms. Vernon has said, is when I was here before, we were projecting $6,845,000 as kind of the not to exceed without any cushion. And there was no tax rate impact with that number. Based on the guidance from council, removing the items that had the less than the 20-year useful life, that now goes down to $6,325,000. So that's a difference of $520,000. As Ms. Vernon said, exactly what you're asking for is a not to exceed. And so if you wanted to put some cushion, I believe you could still go up to $6,845,000 and say there would be no tax rate increase if that is helpful. And then that gives you some cushion to the extent that the bids come in over. And you don't have to issue that amount. It's just the amount that you're committing to your voters in your community that you would not exceed.
That's just my biggest concern, because they have been off, and we've had to come back and amend to pay for those jobs. So, and as far as the not listing streets, so how, at this point, how do voters know where, like, to what streets that the money is going to?
And Mayor, I can maybe help answer that as well. Pending the decision of the City Council this evening, if you decide to proceed with this, we will begin working immediately on an information brochure. It will tell what you're doing, how much it will cost, and the streets that are going to, that you project to be impacted. So it is not specifically in the election order where you list the streets, but it's in the informational brochure. We'll put in there that based on the discussions that it's anticipated that these are the streets that the city would be funding should this election pass. And so it can't, I think as I mentioned last time, this can only be factual information. It can't be for or against. So we would use the information for the streets, and that would be in part of the informational brochure that could go to the community.
Concerns or questions that came up with in speaking with them?
But I do think I would be comfortable with us using that higher number for the not to.
6 million what?
It was 6.8.
6,845, yes, ma'am.
And the reason that it went down is because when we had that preliminary list and they sent it out, there was some streets in there that only had a 10-year expectancy. So it was when Monique had asked for input, I personally didn't want to spend 20 years paying for something that was only going to last 10 years. So that was one of my comments. And it wasn't reconstruction, it was a mill and overlay, so it wasn't actually reconstructing the street. It was just, I guess, cosmetic, if you will.
Okay.
I'm not sure if anybody else had any
Are you ready?
Questions.
Mayor, I move that we authorize the issuance of the general obligation bonds for no more than six.
Wait, we're not there yet.
Oh.
Yeah, that'll be the next item.
Oh, okay.
We don't have any more questions.
Any questions? Just want to make sure. Okay. All right. Item 7B, discussion and possible action on ordinance number O-2018-829, calling a bond election to be held on May 5th, 2018, to authorize the issuance of a general obligation bond. This is the first reading.
Good evening, Mayor, Council members. Again, for the record, my name is Noel Valdez. I'm with the law firm of McCall, Parkhurst, and Horton. A couple issues that I'd like to bring up. First, just to let you know a little bit about what my firm's role is going to be in the bond election is. We have already worked with Ms. Vernon in putting together the election ordinance before you that actually calls the bond election. We will further work with staff and Ms. Vernon to make sure that postings are done correctly, publications are done correctly, that the proper information is put both in English and Spanish, and we'll be guiding on those issues as well. If you all do call the bond election, it's successful. The bonds that are authorized and issued will have to be approved by the Attorney General. Attorney General will look to see that every proceeding that was taken, every posting, every publication that was required under state law was indeed done. It's our job to make sure that we comply with state law in holding your bond election so that the bonds are approved by the Attorney General at the end of the day. The ordinance before you, I think I heard a motion was going to be read. You're exactly right that there's a blank right now in that motion language, and all we need is for the amount of the bond election to be read into that motion. and second and approved, and that would actually call the bond election. If there's any questions with regard to the ordinance or legal procedures of the election, I'd be happy to answer those. But as well, questions usually come during the election, so we're always available to answer any questions that might come up during the election as well.
Is there any? Okay. I'll entertain a motion.
Okay, let me try it again. Mayor, I move that we accept ordinance number 0-2018-829, calling for a bond election to be held on May the 15th, 2018, to authorize the issuance of a general obligation bond no more than $6,845,000.
Okay, we have a motion by Councilmember Wilson, seconded by Councilmember Pierce, to accept ordinance number 0-2018-829. Is there any further discussion? Will our city secretary please call roll?
Councilmember Wilson?
Yes.
Councilmember Apodaca?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Lehman?
Yes.
Councilmember Pierce?
Yes.
Mayor Pierce?
Yes. Item 7C. After the agenda was posted, our attorney informed us that state law does not require a second reading on this ordinance, so we will skip this item. Item 7D, discussion and possible action on resolution number R-2018-698, calling a general / special election on May 5th, 2018, for the purpose of electing 3 council members for a 2-year term and 1 council member for a 1-year term on the city council, designating the polling places and directing the giving of notice of such election and providing details relating to the holding of such election. I will turn this over to our city manager.
Okay. So, Mayor and Council, in order to proceed with our election for May 5th or for the council seats, we need this resolution approved. And just to be clear for the residents, the reason we're having both a regular and a special election is because the current seat that Councilmember Apodaca holds was an appointment until the next election. But that is considered a special election since that seat technically would not have come up until next year. So we will have both the general, the regular and the special election made.
All right, I will entertain a motion.
Mayor, I move that we accept resolution number R-2018-698, calling a general / special election on May the 5th, 2018, for the purpose of electing 3 council members for a 2-year term and 1 council member for a 1-year term on the city council.
We have a motion by council member Wilson, seconded by Mayor Pro Tem Lehman, to accept accept resolution number R-2018-698. Is there any further discussion? Will our city secretary please call roll?
Councilmember Wilson?
Yes.
Councilmember Apodaca?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Lehman?
Yes.
Councilmember Pierce?
Yes.
Mayor Pierce?
Yes. Item 7E, discussion and possible action on City of Kirby employee pay scale. I will turn this over to our city manager.
Okay, Mayor and Council, just to give you a little background, Council approved an employee pay scale for every department, and you have a copy of that in your packet. We have not revised the pay scale since it was approved. We have implemented. Now, at the time of implementation, to bring all existing employees current, what we did was the scale started at like a starting pay and went up years 1, 2, 3, 4, and so on. So at that time, we spent about $55,000 to put all employees who needed to be moved up on that pay scale in their right category. And so there were some employees who received a raise at that time. since the implementation of the scale, we've had many employees who've moved up based on additional certification, education, years of service, and so forth. However, because we did not put in place a process to increase the scale, when employees receive the cost of living adjustments, for example, the one we received October 1st of 2017, all employees received 3% across the board. That slightly affects the scale because now as we hire new people, they're coming in still at the starting of the scale. However, other employees who may move up, they already have the 3% and then they're going to the next level of the scale, which in some cases exceeds or does not even get to the amount because they already have the 3%. So what I just want to do today is to start the discussion about us possibly adding to this scale, setting up a process where if there's going to be a cost of living adjustment in a fiscal year, that we also add that same adjustment to the scale. That way every year as we move on, it will stay accurate and we won't be trying to play catch up. It wouldn't, if we implemented a 3% across the board right now, it would get us, you know, to where all employees are. And it wouldn't have a specific dollar amount per se to affect the scale. It would just be, again, as individuals move up, we look at those on a case by case.
So if, when we did the 3% increase, if that took somebody close to where they were supposed to be, they're just getting bumped up just to meet what they should be at?
No, I guess the easiest way to explain it is the 3% cost of living went on everybody's current salary.
Correct.
And then let's say an employee since October 1st, they got their 3%. But let's say January 1st, they became, I don't know, a master peace officer.
Right.
So then we go on the scale and look at, you know, where that's located. They might have already exceeded that with the 3%. So there's really no additional increase based on that scale. So unless we were to add 3% to the scale. But since we didn't, you know, we have not done that because that wasn't approved to handle it that way. So we kind of ran, you know, some numbers. If we did 3%, this already has a formula built into it where we could just add 3% and it would go all the way across the scale.
So in essence, is that a COLA or is that just to get this up to?
I guess it would be adding the COLA to the pay scale, just so that as the employees who are existing get the COLA, it still matches what's on the scale. If I didn't explain that well enough. But we've looked at other ways to try to just keep the scale current, and that was really, for this first phase, the only way that we could think of doing it is just to add the 3% all the way across. There was also, you know, a suggestion that, okay, every year do we need to add to the scale so that it continues to go up? You know, do you leave the scale as is? And then, you know, as you get cost of living, you would still get that, but then this would be secondary to the cost of living, the way the pay scale goes up.
If we did that 3% across, that's what you're talking about, correct? Across
scale.
But physically too, I mean, that's not just on paper, that would literally be giving the increases to the employees.
Only when they reach another level on the scale. So they wouldn't get it today. So for example, if we added 3% across the board to this scale, that's not giving anybody a 3% increase. When an employee...
Okay. So we're just talking paper-wise.
We're talking about the scale.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The paper scale. So okay. Then all that does is, for example, if the starting salary for the position is $15 an hour, that's going to go up by 3%. So the next person we hire for that position would get that $15.30. but it would not affect anybody who is currently making that amount at that level. So because employees only get an increase based on the scale when they reach the next level.
So if I stay here for 20 years and don't do anything to stay at that bare minimum, then what would my...
Then you would only be eligible for cost of living increases.
Yeah.
And that was something that we talked about, you know, putting that scale in place, that that would happen. And there may have been one or two people who were already maxed out.
But that, and that,
and the person that's been here for almost a year, then the guy that comes in, brand spanking new off the street for any department, he's going to get paid more than the guy that's almost been here for a year.
No, he wouldn't get paid more. He wouldn't get paid more currently coming in, but he would get paid slightly more than what the starting is now. But he would still have to work his way up to that 20 years or that level.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm a brand new employee. I've almost been with the city of Kirby for, I'm at 11 months. A guy just gets hired last week. He's starting at 3% higher than what I'm making for that first year as a brand new employee.
Right, that you would have, yeah. But
all the time.
Most employees.
So then how would the employee...
That's what I'm saying. To me, as an employee, that's not an incentive. If I've been at a company, and I'm just going to use the city as a company, the company, but then somebody that comes in is going to be making more, even if it's just for a short time, that person was hired or is earning more than I am, and I've been with the company for 11 months. You know, that to me is a problem, that somebody off the street comes that's and is paid more than somebody who's given 11 months of service to the company. So that's my concern with this piece, which is why I was asking, because if it keeps increasing that base salary, then potentially it's really not an increase to those individuals who've already been here, because, I mean, it would just be easier for them to quit and then get rehired. I mean, I know that's not going to happen, but... I mean, essentially, they would be better off resigning and getting rehired at that new number.
Yeah, but there, the people who were already, you know, higher up on the scale upon implementation are not even going to be close to that starting amount. I mean, and again, it's a challenge as to how do you keep the scale current then, because... You know, we knew going into this there would be people who did not get an increase at all, and if they don't go and get anything additional, then they'll never get an increase. Or if they're already at the highest level in their department, there is nowhere for them to go. So that was one of the challenges that staff had with implementing a scale to begin with. But, you know, so now we're just really trying to figure out the best way to keep it.
I mean, I'm not opposed to somebody who's just here and not doing anything except, you know, being a... you know, a long-term employee, but it's not adding anything. I'm okay with that person not increase when there's somebody else that's, you know, going to school and getting, you know, getting additional certifications to better service the community. I'm okay with that. But just the fact that somebody can come in, even in the little interim, you know, and get paid more than somebody that's already an established employee is kind of concerning.
And that can happen now with the scale as is.
Right.
Because if we hire an employee right now who has a seawater license and a CDL, they are going to make significantly more than the employee who's doing that same position that's been here for 10 years with no certification. And that's just...
Well, I mean, I understand if somebody comes in with that certification. I mean, because that person came in with that certification, so the person that's been here 10 years, they could have got that certification and didn't. So I'm okay with that. It's just when somebody comes in with the exact same experience. But I mean, I'm not opposed to somebody that comes in with more certification than someone who's been here 10 years and has chosen not to get a certification that they could. It's just when they're equal, that to me, that's concerning, because it's really no initiative, you know, it's not an incentive or initiative for somebody who's been here for that long. I mean, for even 11 months, like Councilmember Pierce's example. And the pay scale that was done in, I think, 2016. So is this something that, because I wasn't there, was this something that all the department heads had an input, or was this something that council put together solely with staff.
So at that time, department heads worked with the mayor to put the pay scale together, and we presented it to council, and there were some tweaks made to it, and then we brought back the final recommendation, and it was approved.
You had a $100-something thousand choice or a $55,000 choice. How was it done previously before all of that?
We never had a pay scale previously, so from what I understood, you know, when an employee was hired, it was basically the city manager decided what they were paid, was what I'm told. So at least now with the pay scale, we do have a starting point for everybody that we follow.
So how much across the board, if you did 3% on this pay scale, is it going to come out of the budget? Do we have to make an adjustment?
Well, and that's the thing. We wouldn't be giving anybody any money. We just add 3% to these numbers here. So all of these dollar amounts would just go up by 3%. So it only affects the budget when, say, an existing employee moves to the next level.
Right. Okay, is that going to happen this fiscal
year? 12 years or 13 years. I have my master's. We'll just use PD for example. I have a master's certification. I have maxed out everything. So then they get the 3% cost of living, or 3-5% cost of living. But then they're also going to get an additional 3% for bumping up because we've added another 3% to this.
No, that's not the intent. Is that, again, nobody would be getting a raise based on bumping up the pay scale today. They would only get a the raise when they get to that next level. So
that's what I'm saying. When they get to that next level, they're not only going to get that, they're going to get the 3-5% cost of living raise included too.
Yeah, because we already got that. So everybody got that October 1st. And then they move up to the next level. They'll get whatever their next dollar amount is, plus 3% of that if we add two.
How many employees right now do we have that are getting ready to move up to the next level?
Nobody that I'm currently aware of, except for we have one officer that we have a conditional hire for. Who, if we hire him now, he would be hired at the starting salary, but he should be finished with his advance within about 90 days. So upon completion, then he would get his advance. And then we have a clerk who, by May, should have a certification, and then that person would move up. But we have already moved several employees up. I mean, since the implementation of the scale, there have been some police officers to advance. There have been some water employees to advance. So those people have moved up. So it just affects the budget for that department at that time that they move up. And that's usually when we address it.
And that's what I'm asking. What departments are going to be affected right now?
The people moving out, and what's the process? Because, again, nobody's pending any certifications except those two.
Are their numbers worked up with the 3%? I can use a calculator.
Yeah, and I can send that out. We did. The finance director did just take this scale as it is, add 3% to every column, and they went up like 30 cents,
right,
pretty much per person or per dollar amount. But again, there's no way to like tally that and say, okay, this is how much it's going to cost, because again, we're just applying it to the scale, not the people. So.
Right. Well, like a utility worker would fit into that possible bucket where somebody would, you know, almost make more than that person, you know, in that interim before it kicked in. And I'm using them because they're the lowest number on here.
Right. And actually, it appears there's about a 3% difference across each year. Rather than start at $10, they start at $10.30.
But year one is at $10.30.
Right.
And then year two is at $10.61. So
the way that would change was then that $10.30 would be the starting, $10.61 would be year one, and so forth.
If we move forward with this, I just think we need to make sure that we put it in every time to make sure that it's consistent each year.
Right.
Depending on.
And that's you know, the part that I want council to consider is that, you know, if are we going to do it every time there is a cost of living? Are we going to add that cost of living to the scale? Or are we going to bring this back periodically to revise the scale? It would just be, you know, good to have an idea, because, you know, employees already ask, okay, did this go up because we got the 3%? We've had people ask that. The answer is no, it did, because the scale has not changed since adoption.
Well, in essence, somebody could technically get 6% because they just got 3%, and if they got that certification, they already had that 3%. So if we increase it, then that 3%, so now that person has 6%, not 3%. So, and I mean, I can understand why somebody would say, hey, are you adding it to that? So
better incentive to improve your job skills too.
All right, are there any more questions? Okay. Does anyone, I will entertain a motion.
Mayor, I move that we add the 3% to the employee's pay scale. And every year, do you want to look at it every year?
I would say absolutely, yeah. It needs to
and look at it every year during the budget time? When we're working on the budget, to work on that too?
We have a motion by Council Member Wilson to add the 3% to the pay scale to reflect the cost of living.
Second.
Have a motion by Councilmember Wilson, seconded by Councilmember Apodaca. Is there any further discussion? Will our City Secretary please call roll?
Councilmember Wilson?
Yes.
Councilmember Apodaca?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Lehman?
Yes.
Councilmember Pierce?
Yes.
Mayor Pierce?
Yes. Would you send out the updated form so that we can see that? Item 7F, discussion and possible action on the garage constructed at 4807 Gibbs Sprawl. Councilmember Aldridge requested this item to be brought back up. If you recall, at our one of the last meetings, we denied the variance for the carport since it was, in fact, deemed as a garage. It was at that point that the property owner would be coming back to City Hall to gain a permit for a garage. I believe Officer Thompson did reach out. Was a permit?
He did come by and he picked up the permit information and then returned. He just wanted to submit to the meeting.
The permit?
The application.
Oh, the application. Okay. This, for anyone who wasn't aware, this is at 4807 Gibbs Sprawl. It started out supposed to be a carport. The individual said that he was actually doing the work himself. It was actually a contract that built it. He was asked to stop the process because it didn't meet the requirements of the setback. Later on, the sides miraculously got built on the side of it, so then it became a garage. So he came to council. There was some discussion there. At a subsequent meeting, council deemed that it was not a carport and denied the variance. So at this point, has Officer Thompson made contact, or has he?
Yes, Officer Thompson made contact with him. Again, he picked up the application, but he's not turned it in. I visited with the city attorney about what our next course of action could be. He suggested that we give a deadline for him to apply for the permit. a reasonable deadline. If he fails to do that, then co-compliance can cite him daily or weekly for being in violation. That would go to municipal court, and then the judge is the only person who'd have the authority to decide if he needs to take it down or so forth.
So if he applies for the permit, we have to accept the fact that it's a garage? I mean, we have to, as a council, we have to?
A permit for a garage, then it'd have to be inspected. It'd have to pass inspection by our building inspectors, and then...
Does he need to go back to PNZ to get all of the variance requests again? But in the meantime, he keeps adding to it, or...?
He should. He should not be doing any work because he doesn't have a permit.
My concern is just the fact that he continued to do it after he was told to stop, and the fact that regardless of whether he's able to put his items in it to make the area look tidier, I mean, anybody could use that excuse. I want to build this and I want to build that because I'm going to put my stuff in it, regardless of what the ordinances are. So that's my concern, and then it just keeps moving further and further back, and he has this property sitting there. And ultimately, basically... did everything he was told not to do, and almost deliberately. So,
and gets away with it.
To me, it the whole thing is hinged on the first ordinance. He's not sitting back 25 foot from the curb. That's the first violation right there. And I think the inspector that came out that was going to inspect it, he wrote that up right away and said the man is not following regulations. So as far as I'm concerned, it should have been stopped right there. And, you know, I kind of halfway feel sorry for him. He's built the whole garage and put a garage door on it and everything else.
They actually,
as far as I'm concerned, it ought to be tore down. He's violated every rule and regulation that we've come up with, other than what the P&Z said yes to. And I'm sorry, it just went over everybody's head, and it got to be stopped. That's my feeling.
So when he, if he doesn't come get it?
Decided.
I know, but who sets the deadline? Yeah, who sets?
Well, and that's what the city attorney said. We can decide that. So if council decides, okay, he has until Monday to apply for the permit and start that process, then we allow him to do that, and it would still take time to go through P&Z and then come back to council. Or... because he's currently in violation, we can just cite him now. He can go to municipal court, and again, the judge is the only person who has the authority to make him tear it down for being in violation.
When is the next P&Z meeting? Do y'all have one set for sure?
18th of February.
So it's next week.
Well, I think he should just be cited now since he didn't. He didn't follow
court.
Anything. He's been given plenty of time.
Yep.
Exactly.
Another
month.
Find him every day. You can do it.
Yeah.
Sorry, but is P&Z?
A couple of violations already. The setback, he didn't set it back. And then I think Councilman Grant brought up the question of the material that was used is not coincide with what the regulations say. So that's a second violation.
Well,
he
closed
it up as a garage after he made a application for a carport. That's a third violation. I mean, the man is just doing what he wants to do, and we're letting him get by with it, and it's got to stop.
Well, if we decide tonight on what to do, as Ms. Abadaka said, then... he can be written citations starting tomorrow, and then he can go see the judge. And we can even put it in there to where every day he fails to do that, just keep writing him citations. He can go see the judge. The judge, for our city manager, then can make the assessment of what he's going to pay or what can be done. being like what you said earlier, you'd tear it all down and start it all brand new again.
I concur with Councilmember Apodaca. Somebody wants to make a motion to anything they think this process should go.
Mayor, I move that we start citing the resident at 4807 Gibbs Sprawl for not abiding by the rules of the building codes and do it every day. You have three citations that you could write in one day for three violations. And have it come up at court. What's court date?
Time that would be the March court date.
It's 21. All right, we have a motion by Councilmember Wilson.
Second.
Seconded by Mayor Pro Tem Lehman to cite the homeowner based on what the ordinance allows. Is there any further discussion?
Starting tomorrow.
Did you say starting tomorrow?
Tomorrow.
And that would be starting tomorrow. Is that whether or not he turns in the form?
That's right. Start tomorrow.
Okay,
start
I just want to make sure. Okay. All right. Starting tomorrow.
I have a month to turn it in.
Is there any further discussion? Will our city secretary please call roll?
Councilmember Wilson?
Yes.
Councilmember Apodaca?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Lehman?
Yes.
Councilmember Pierce?
Yes.
Mayor Pierce?
Yes. Item 7G, discussion and possible action on progress of the construction activity on the 2017 water main replacement project. Gilbert, you're up. Because the timelines have changed once again.
Yes, ma'am. Mayor, Council, good evening. I got an update on the on SAC. On the project right now, on Happiness and Scotsman and Arneson. The update right now is calls for the restoration on asphalt over there on Happiness between the 5200 and 5400 block is close to completion on that side. From the 5200 block, 5214 to 5100 block, they're still digging out that area due to water main breaks or due to issues, leaks that were on the old main, the existing main, some of the ground there was too saturated, so they had to dig some of that out and haul it off and replace it with dry material so it would be stabilized correctly. So that put a little bit of a kink in the time. So the restoration of asphalt on Happiness is scheduled to between the start is the 22nd of January and it's supposed to end February 14th. The tie-in on Arneson has been completed on the 29th. The dual services on Arneson and Scotsman were done between the 30th of January and February 6th. Those are complete. Tie-in at Scotsman was done on the 7th. That is also complete. The the restoration of pavement on Arneson and Scotsman's scheduled to start on the 14th of February and finish on the 19th of February. Topsoil and sod is supposed to start on the 21st of February and end on the 24th. Cleanup would be initial cleanup for both job sites and all three streets, February 28th. That's the start and end date. And final completion, February 29th, or actually March 1st and 2018 for final completion. That's what they're calling for. That's the schedule that I was given today by Mr. Roy Heath. Also, I spoke with them regarding traffic safety, speeding, trench safety, job site being left unattended with open holes at open excavations. Expressed the importance of public safety and communication with the public through traffic setups. And also, they have been in compliance for the times that I've gone out there and seen them. I spoke with one of their foremans as well, as and with Fermin. I believe he's a superintendent out there. I had some of those issues straightened out with him. He communicated that to his foreman. What I told them is that they needed to be clear with communicating to the public. And by being clear is traffic setup, making sure the cones are out and safe. Whenever the job site moves, they need to arrange their cones or their barrels and their traffic setup and flaggers if necessary when they're doing excavation or they're doing any type of work. Another thing I brought up to them as well is their backfills on the services when they're replacing the lines. Initially, when you replace a line, a service line or a water main, you're going to bed it with either modified material, which is small pea gravel, which they're not using, but they're going to be using sand. Sand is okay for bedding down in the ground. Now, when you get up to the top or the meter boxes in that general area, you don't use sand. You use topsoil. Okay, because that sand's not going to do nothing. It's not going to grow anything. It's not going to return the area to the same as before or better, the way we expect it. And some of the meter boxes were filled with sand, and you know, we have those components on our meters where we have the AMR system, which they drive around and it picks up and we get our readings every month. You know, in my experience, sand is terrible, you know, and then you have moisture in the box, it could affect some of those components theoretically. So I spoke with Fermin about the sand there and the sand within our meter boxes, and he's working on that to correct that and get the sand out of people's yards as well. We've had a couple concerns with some residents there about that, and I addressed that, and he'll take care of it, and I'm going to continue to monitor it daily.
So was from the last time that we received the update on the 28th, was there any water main breaks on Happiness that you're aware of? And I only say that because our end date that we were given at the last meeting was February 6th due to those existing main breaks. And now it's the 14th.
And so. I have not been updated on that as far as how many they've had. It's quite possible that there might have been a pinhole in one of the services that may have created, you know, a leak. But that, if that's the case, that would have to be either on a short service, which is close to the excavation, or on a long service, but within a few feet of that long service, because they're tying in, they're not relaying the whole long service. So they're tying in at the edge of the main, what the contract calls for. The other thing would be any type of weather, if they were excavating or the soil, that any rain or anything we might have got could have affected it. I would give maybe a day or two, but I mean, not something that's going to push it off for a very long time. You know, we haven't had that much rain, and the rain really truly affects it if you're digging it up and then it starts raining and there's a pile of material there, then you really can't backfill. Right. As far as main breaks on that area, no. We do currently have a small leak on the other side of the valve, let's say about 10 yards away from where they're tying in, but that wouldn't affect anything else. That's on Borchers, I believe, and that's not that shouldn't be any issue. As far as main breaks on Arneson and Scotsman, I haven't been notified of any of those, and nor have I seen any.
On that cleanup, does that include Blue Jay and all that area that on that side of Blue Jay where they're
doing their work? Yeah, it's going to include. I've talked with him about that as well, and I expressed to him, you know, the importance of, you know, that they're keeping their tires clean and keeping that area clean. Most of the times, whenever you have a traffic, like a pad set up or something, a yard, the entrance and exit of that yard, which the curb is very low in some spots, and it's pretty much level with the street or non-existent in some of those areas, not all, but some. And usually it's common practice to put bull rock, you know, for say 10, 15, 20 feet of bull rock when the entrance. So whenever the trucks are going through, that bull rock's pretty thick, pretty heavy. So they'll bounce and it'll knock off some mud off of the tires. I've talked with them about anything, any mess that they have made whatsoever, they're going to go and pick it up. They've had transferred from their yard to Happiness material at times, and I purposely drive through there to make sure that any material that you're hauling, because they've hauled it with the front end loader with the bucket, and any good operator knows that when you pick up a load, you know, you kind of give it a little shake and it'll knock off the loose stuff. So then when you're driving on the road, you hit the bumps, there's not a very good suspension on those machines, so the bucket hits a lot and you dump off material. So I've gone and driven through there and I've had them go back and clean up whatever mud or anything that's on the street. And I've expressed to him that, you know, it's very important to keep our town clean. So they're going to clean that area if need be.
The only reason I asked that is because I actually had a resident that lives on Sir Robert in that area indicating that they were concerned about that because of the heavy equipment that was going down Blue Jay and crossing the curb that you're talking about, because it's damaged that area, which goes back to our other question before, that all of that heavy equipment that is going on the different streets, I know that it wasn't in that job, you know, that contractual job. However, it's their equipment that's, you know, utilizing some of those streets and damaging to not the way that they used to be. On Crown, the water sitting there has actually dipped Crown at Crown and Happiness on. So there's water, which is that water that I've been talking about all the time that just sits there. Mm-hmm. So it's literally divoted that area. The Blue Jay area, again, has dips in it, and it has, you know, damaged from their equipment going in and out.
That fire hydrant that's right next to it. That is a MH fire hydrant from 1968. To rebuild that fire hydrant, you really can't. You'd have to replace it with parts. So I've started looking in on that. That fire hydrant, they're opening and closing it with the meter, getting water on there periodically. However, I noticed, I went back to that area of that you're concerned with, and I noticed that our fire hydrant's kind of leaking a little bit. So a lot of times with the seat of the fire hydrant on the bottom, you know, it's a valve that comes in and out. It's a plug, and there's a rubber gasket on the bottom. Within time, that gasket will either wear out, and occasionally when you open it and close it, sometimes you can get like a small rock or something in there. And before going and digging the whole thing out, because we can't find replacement parts, I would need to go out there and flush that hydrant for a good while, which would flood all the Happiness. So that part right there, that's our side leaking, our fire hydrant. But it's also coming from them turning it on and off. It could be wear and tear, or it could be a rock in there. So I need to kind of wait till they finish that Happiness area to blow out that gasket that's down there, to turn on the hydrant so the pressure of the water, if there's a rock in there, it'll throw it out. If it doesn't and I torque it down, doesn't shut off, then I'm going to need to go back and replace that fire hydrant with the controlling valve.
So who's, after their completion, who's going to go back and make sure that it's back to the way that it was as far as before any monies change hands or those types of...
That final walkthrough, and they'll have a punch list. If there's something they have to go back and correct, they'll have a time period.
But that's what I'm saying. Is it going to be the city, or is it going to be Ford Engineering, or...
Well, it should be both. Both the project manager from Ford and Yogurt would have to go out with the contractors to do the walkthrough.
Because I'd like to see, I mean, not that anybody up here is, you know, the expert in that, but the people that travel on those streets, which is everybody here, knows what condition certain streets were in. And like I said, it's very apparent that them going in and out with that equipment and driving to and from has definitely damaged those areas between the job sites. And I understand, you know, when Roy was here, he said, oh, we're going to put it back exactly, but we only go from the curb to 7 feet. However, that takes care of the side that they're working on, but not the other side, that where all of their equipment was driving down, sitting, waiting to, you know, fill or unfill the other side of the area. So their equipment is just sitting there, and it's divoted different sides of the street for the side that their equipment was sitting on, waiting to reach into the other part.
Yeah,
my concern is they're going to take care of the side that they tore up, but they're not taking care of the sides of Arneson and Scotsman and Happiness and Blue Jay and Borchers and all of the different streets that they traveled getting to and from those job sites.
Well, what I've noticed just with the with that, I've had them go back and clean up. Initial driving with the heavy equipment, it really can't do anything about that. They have to get from point A to point B. They have to have a yard somewhere to place their material and their equipment. So I would have to look in on that a little bit more, do some more research on the streets. But when I went out to the Blue Jay and where their yard is, I talked to them about that. I didn't notice any chips or anything broken on the curb other than was pretty much pre-existing, because the curb is sunk all the way down in some parts. So, and that's something that happens over a pretty long period of time.
He took pictures of before and after, so I would be interested to see them.
Yeah, I got pictures as well.
I think that everybody who's in that vicinity knows exactly what those specific streets look like. Like I said, I've had this one person call me several times that lives on by the Blue Jay, and I've actually forwarded the information to our city manager. So I'm just, like I said, I was just concerned because their date keeps getting further and further behind on all of those streets, and since they're supposed to be the ones that are doing Van Zingelman.
Yeah, and the process now that the pretty much you could say the hard part is done, the tie-ins. After that, the services, everything now is just pretty much doesn't have to do with excavating other than a little bit to stabilize the ground and then put the asphalt in the base, everything that needs to be there. So hopefully they're more accurate with this timeline. However, you know, you never know what we can get as far as weather, but this is what we have right
March
now.
March 1st. So.
Yes, ma'am. March 1st.
Heard it here first.
When will they start on Van Zingelman?
Van Zingelman? We're kind of waiting on that, right? Yeah.
We're waiting on the notice to proceed from TxDOT.
But TxDOT will be all over that job.
They will do inspections also.
Okay. Anybody else? Okay. Thank you. Good. Okay, item 7H, discussion and possible action regarding the City of Kirby Bad Weather Emergency Action Plan. I will turn this item over to Councilmember Wilson.
Okay. What I was looking for was, I know that we had last year when we had the bad weather and we had some water mains that were had broken and nobody was kind of running around what to do. And so when it iced over, I got phone calls from people saying, hey, I'm going down Ackerman Road. There's nothing here. It's slippery. We're headed to the 4-H farm. What can we do? So I made a couple of calls and people said, well, everybody was notified not to get out on the road, that it was iced over, which is fine, but you have personnel that are required to go to work. And we only have three bridges. And I felt like that we let the citizens of Kirby down, not protecting them. And they did protect them after the fact. And it just bothers me that we just didn't protect. It didn't cost very much to protect our citizens from what they did. And I understand what all you have on here, but, you know, the fire trucks could have taken off and went down Van Zingelman and hit that piece of ice and slipped, went off of Ackerman. And I just, that was just my whole point of all of this, was that I felt like we let the citizens, even though none of the citizens got hurt, you know, we still just, I feel like we let down the citizens of Kirby for not protecting them and not being prepared to put sand or whatever, you know, the salt stuff on the bridges.
Yes, ma'am. I can understand what you're feeling, and the fire trucks were traveling up and down Ackerman and Van Zingelman all morning long prior to that one vehicle that did go on have the accident. The night before, I'd reached out to Public Works about sand. There was no sand. My understanding, it was mixed with pieces of concrete. If you just put sand on, it's going to get wet during the rain and potentially freeze over. We did I did reach out to TxDOT about getting FM 78 pretreated. I got an email later from TxDOT that FM 78 is not on their list for pretreatment. It's 37410-90-I-10. There was a conference call with Bexar County EOC at 5 o'clock the day before on the 15th. We spoke with Bexar County EOC. They had TxDOT out getting the main highways done as well. And then as far as after the incident, that's when we shut the bridge down and we started shutting some bridges down. And then the gravel
modified material
was put on the bridges. Now, Bexar County and San Antonio had still 140 plus accidents, even with the pretreatments. So pretreatment doesn't necessarily work either.
It was, I guess my whole thing was everything seems like everything happened after the fact and not protecting before, saying, you know, let me try this before something would happen. Everything came together after the fact. So if we have a train wreck here, are we going but you're prepared for that now. But if you weren't, you would have, after the fact, let's sit down and decide what we're going to do. Does that make sense to you?
It does make sense.
No. Well,
I just felt like the initiation, the analogy, but a train wreck, we're not prepared for it.
But you're prepared. You have your meetings. You have your meeting where you have everything going on. If this happens, this, and this. It happens if you have a train wreck over here. You already know what your positions are going to be.
We have a plan, yes. Right. But that doesn't mean...
And I think Kirby had a plan on what to do with the ice.
We actually have, you know, there's the overall emergency management plan, and then there's some scenarios of events that could happen that we've been through. But until it actually happens, that's when we put these, you know, after incident plans together, so then if it happens again, we know what things we needed to do better. I feel like in this particular incident, part of the issue was that we didn't have some of those items available. We started getting the winter advisories around 5 p.m. the 15th of January, which was a city holiday, so there were no, with the exception of the emergency personnel, no employees here. So that next morning was when other personnel, like Public Works, was able to start going out and purchasing some of these
items.
Well,
I think...
So now we have them.
Well, I think that we knew before that day because... We went out when they said that the bad weather was coming. We went out and prepared ourselves for the bad weather a week before that because they were telling you it was coming down. And so I just want us to be prepared and not have people calling and saying, hey, you know, I'm slipping and sliding off of Ackerman Bridge headed to the 4-H farm. You know, the kids who go with their families could be out there. And I just think that we need to watch out for our citizens more in that way. I just feel like that we let the citizens of Kirby down, and that's what we're here for, is to protect them.
How many accidents did we have, Chief, that were Kirby residents?
One.
Thank you, sir.
Item 8A, request by Mayor and Council members for items to be placed on future City Council agendas and announcements on city events, community interests. Councilmember Apodaca.
A couple of things. Jake and Officer Murphy are very popular. I've heard a lot of good things about them, so I'm really proud that we have that in place now. It's really nice. And I had someone ask me about some flood zone questions. Who do we direct that to?
Are you talking about the Bexar County, like the the Rosio Creek floodplain?
No, I think these two homeowners were talking about whether or not they have to have flood insurance on their homes, because their homes are near, I guess, what used to be a flood zone.
They can direct those questions to FEMA, if you specifically know about that.
Okay. Yes.
FEMA's the one that sets all of that. Mm-hmm.
I do. I would again like to for us to look at some type of other communications besides just Facebook and stuff, and that shows again after everything went down, we changed garbage pickups. The people who have Facebook and who do the social media stuff all didn't put their garbage cans out, and you drive around the older sections and you see that everybody has their garbage cans sitting there waiting to be picked up. And I just think that we really need to, even if it's two or three times a year, to let people know what's happening. But like Universal City did a reverse calling and letting people know in their community when the garbage had changed. And I don't know, you know, what company that you'd have to look into for some type of reverse calling, but I thought that was pretty interesting that they get calls like that all the time, letting them know what's happening in their city.
Are you asking staff to check that?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, I'll just check and see what they use. But, and also, I heard about Jake. And saw it on TV, and I think that's good publications for what we're doing. And I want to thank the chief for all the work that they've been doing over in that area. That's it.
Mayor Pro Tem Lehman?
Just kind of get back and answer a question that you brought up about the flood insurance.
Don't discuss.
Huh?
Don't discuss it.
Well, I just want to verify they don't need it no more.
Just don't discuss it.
I don't have anything else.
Councilmember Pierce?
I have nothing at this time.
All right. Donations are being accepted for the Junior Responder Academy being held during spring break, March 12th through March 16th. Cases of water, Capri Sun, fruit snacks, chips that are individually wrapped, and monetary donations for T-shirts that are being provided to the 32, 7 to 13-year-olds participants. So if you're interested in donating, the Kirby dispatchers are accepting those donations. Filing for office ends February the 16th. Applications may be picked up at City Hall Monday through Friday from 8 to 5. And city offices are closed February 19th. Yes. Is anybody else?
Nope. Oh, I won't be here next council. I'll be out of town.
Councilmember Wilson will be out of town next week. All right. Anything else? Adjourn. Thank you, everybody, for coming. Mm-hmm.